Okay, Cosmos. I mean, someone could say, I also understand Cosmos of the Bhagavatam and all that, and I agree, but a dream? Are you seriously suggesting that this world, this entire material existence, is but a dream? When I was 10, 11 years old, I wrote a pop song, my first one, on a notepad in our kitchen, and it was called Life is But a Dream. I don't remember the text. But yeah. Isn't that just the same way of saying it, the metaphor? Illustrating the fact that this is a temporary reality. And I know, and that's what I said at the very beginning of this book, that this cosmology may be something you didn't expect. And as I have emphasized a couple of times throughout this book, yes, you need to really be ready to, willing and able to look at it from a different point of view. But if dream sounds too unreal and insubstantial to you, as if it was false, well, we already mentioned that dreams do exist as well, but they are still dreams. And the very reason we consider them unreal is exactly that they are temporary. A few hours ago I was in some city somewhere else on the planet with an old friend of mine. And we were really grappling with some kind of problem to solve. And I was very engaged in that because it was important. As engaged as I am now. But then, poof. Kind of came floating out of that world, which then dwindled and disappeared into oblivion, And here I am now in what I now call reality. It's so real, isn't it? You can touch it. See it, hear it, taste it and smell it. Then it must be real, isn't it? Well, and that's what a simulated world, a virtual reality. Yes, too, right? So either we put this just between dream and VR, or we kind of sum it up there a little later. So yeah, we can, if you want, forget about dream for now. And look at it the way it is actually being described, both by the Bhagavatam, although it uses a dream metaphor, and some significant branches of modern science, quantum physics and so on, as well as in psychology. This world that seems to be so real out there is more dependent on the mind than what they have told us. Than what we thought, may have thought. And then there's the collective mind that Jung then said that our mental activities are also connected with and dynamically reciprocated with meaning that what I do somehow or other affects that collective mind conscious world. Who is what? Whom? Well, if you look at the Vedic version, it's very simple. At least one way of looking at it. Paramatma, the sun that we are all raised from, the one who is there with us all, and who we are always connected to. And who is actually defining this entire world? Without Rupa. That means that the forms that we see out here in the world are at every moment the it's a reflecting that collective consciousness, the collective mind. And that's why, and that explains what Jung pointed out and studied and called synchronicity. That there is a connection between, as he said, the psyche and the world out there. But you could as well state it that way, there's a connection between us. And that larger consciousness, that bigger soul, whom we are all parts of. And who then we can experience the presence of by the fact that there is, and people like Jung could show, I would say, that there is something we can call a collective mind of consciousness. But also that, although this world is virtual, out there is some vibrations and waves, some energies, sometimes acting as what we call atoms. And here in our minds we perceive these forms and sounds and so on. In other words, a virtual picture of the cosmos, which then have, as we go along here, started to emerge more and more, hasn't it? Thereby explained fully how it can also be an objective reality and not fall into the pit of solipsism. But it's all in my mind and you are too. And if you don't look at the moon, it doesn't exist. So yeah. Let's go on here and see where we arrive next.